Srila Prabhupada. So, welcome to our questions and answers again. Do we have some questions already? Before we start answering the questions, I'll just just explain a little bit about the history of the festival as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, or at least referred to in our BBT Srimad Bhagavatam. Our commentators there in the 10th canto, they make reference to the Padma Purana, Padma Purana's description of the reunion of Lord Krishna with the inhabitants of Vrindavan at Kurukshetra during the great eclipse there. So we can explain a little bit about that as it's described there in our Bhagavatam purports, that Lord Krishna, of course we know the Lord appeared 5,000 years ago. He appeared in Vrindavan, that very sacred land. Vrindavan is still there, just south of Delhi in north central India. Vrindavan is there, and even today there are so many places of the Lord's pastimes, and the pastimes are commemorated in different ways in those different places. So Lord Krishna appeared there 5,000 years ago and lived there for the first 16 or so years that he was on the planet. Krishna was here on this planet for 125 years. And the first 16 or thereabouts years, he was in Vrindavan. So I think many of you would know, because many of you are devotees already, so many of you would know a little bit about what Krishna did in Vrindavan, and what it was like, what those pastimes were like, and what those devotees are like, the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It was all very wonderful. Krishna's supreme pastimes. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So in one sense, all of his pastimes are supreme. But his pastimes in Vrindavan are the topmost. Yes, they're the topmost. Sometimes in Krishna consciousness, in relation to Krishna and his pastimes, sometimes we talk about how Krishna's pastimes are perfect. Then we talk of other pastimes, how they're more perfect than perfect. That must be quite something. And then there are other pastimes which are the most perfect. And then if you want to take it a step further, then there are pastimes which are even more perfect than most perfect. And actually when you get down to it, really it's unlimited actually. But Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, out of all his pastimes, which are considered the supreme activities of any person, whoever that person may be, Krishna's activities are beyond anyone else's activities. But his activities in Vrindavan are the highest. And his devotees in Vrindavan are the highest of all devotees. So therefore, what we're getting at is that in Vrindavan, everything there is unique. it's unique. It's in a class of its own, and there's nothing to compare. Even when we consider other pastimes and devotees of Krishna. So Krishna was there for around 16 years or so. And then, of course that's a long story, but it so happened that Krishna left Vrindavan. He went to Mathura, then some years later he went to Dwarka, and he stayed there also for many years. So, the relationships that Krishna had with his devotees in Vrindavan, they were so deep, far deeper than what we may experience in our relationships, even in the deepest of our relationships. Those relationships with Krishna, they're just in a class of their own altogether. So we all know, I think we all know what it feels like to lose the company of someone who is exceptionally dear to us. I think many of you would have experienced that maybe some very intimate family member has died, and it's very moving, a very moving experience, and can be very difficult to cope with. But the relationships the devotees in Vrindavan have with Krishna, they're much deeper than any of these relationships of ours. So we can just try to imagine just a little bit how the inhabitants of Vrindavan must have felt when Krishna left. Yes, it was really a very deep experience. Very, very deep. And for many years, they were just lamenting in separation from Krishna. As they say, separation makes the heart grow fonder. And it's really the case with Krishna. However, after some years, some decades in fact, after some time, they were reunited. There was a great eclipse, and during eclipses, traditionally, the devotees go to some holy place, and during the eclipse, they bathe. They bathe for purification, because an eclipse is generally considered inauspicious, something contaminating to the mind, to the body, and, you know, to the nervous system and everything. It creates disturbance throughout one's system. So therefore they go and bathe in the holy places, and they went to bathe during this eclipse. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they went to Kurukshetra. And Krishna, he and the inhabitants of Dwarka, they also went to Kurukshetra, some hundreds of kilometers away at least. So then, at that time, Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they were reunited after so many years, decades of separation. So very moving experience, meeting again after such a long time. So they met and had so many exchanges. It was very wonderful. However, after a while, of course, that period of the eclipse, not just the eclipse itself, but the time building up to it and the time immediately after. So that period of the eclipse finished. So everyone was to go home and continue on with their lives. So Krishna was to go back to Dwarka, and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they were to go back to Vrindavan. they're in quite different directions. So it seemed like they're going to be separated again. And again, it would be like just a great tragedy. Sort of like, I don't know, Romeo and Juliet times 1,000 or a million or something. It's just in another sort of realm altogether. So everyone knew we're going to have to leave. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they knew we're going to lose Krishna's company again. Oh no, this is terrible. So the time came, the day came. They knew, now we have to go. So the leader of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the king, Nanda Maharaj, he told all the inhabitants of Vrindavan in the morning that day, all right, we have to leave now, so pack your bags and we'll go. As soon as you've packed your bags, we'll go. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they told Nanda Maharaj, all right, we will pack our bags, we'll get ready, and then we'll go, but just one thing, just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna, and let us spend another hour or two with him. Just let us do that, seeing we're going to be separated again, and who knows when we'll meet next. So just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna and spend a couple of hours with him, and we'll leave in the afternoon. So Nanda Maharaj, he said, all right, we can do that, it's okay. We'll leave after lunch. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they went, they met with Krishna, they came back, and, you know, it was lunchtime or so they had lunch, and they were packing up, and Nanda Maharaj said, all right, get your things together, we have to go now. The inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, okay, we understand. We know we have to go. But just one thing. Before we go, just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna again. Okay? Just again. Just one more time. And we'll go tomorrow morning. We'll definitely go. No problems. Tomorrow morning. So Nanda Maharaj said, well, all right then. So they went and they met with Krishna. They came back, they stayed overnight. The next morning, Nanda Maharaj said, you know, we must go. So seriously, just pack your bags, okay? And we're going. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, you're right. We must go. All right, we'll go. But just one thing. Just let us go and say goodbye to Krishna again. Go on. Just one more time. We don't know when we're going to see him again. Just let us see him one more time. And we'll leave straight after lunch. Definitely. This time. So Nanda Maharaj said, well, all right then. All right. So they went, they saw Krishna, they came back, they had lunch. Nanda Maharaj said, right, we are going. We are going now. Get your things together, we are just going, okay. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan said, yes, we are going. We are definitely going. We are not here, practically. Just one thing though. Just one thing. Just let us say goodbye to Krishna again. Go on. Go on. Just one more time. Please. Please. And where are we, in the morning or the afternoon? I forget. But anyway, what was it? Okay. And they said, we will definitely go tomorrow morning. Absolutely. So Nanda Maharaj is getting a little carried away there. He said, all right, but we are going tomorrow, and that's all there is to it. So they went, they saw Krishna, they came back, they stayed overnight. The next morning, Nanda Maharaj said, we are going right now. Just get your things and we are going. And you know what they said? They said, look, you know, we appreciate that there is a great need to go and we don't want to procrastinate, but just let us see Krishna one more time, please. So, this went on like this. This went on for 3 months. Yes. Finally, Nanda Maharaj had a sort of heart attack combined with nervous breakdown. So they realized, all right, we had better go then. But then they thought, you know, what are we going to do? You know, we already, for so many years, we lived without Krishna. And now it's going to happen again. But this is too much. We can't do it. We just can't do it. So what are we going to do? So then Radharani, Srimati Radharani, she took the gopis. They went to Krishna. They told Krishna that we cannot live without you any longer. It's been too long. It's been too much. We cannot go on. So you must come with us. Krishna said, yes, I agree. Just let me go kill a few more demons and I'll come just now, as they say in South Africa. Now, or whatever, something like that. Now. I'll be right there. The inhabitants, or Srimati Radharani and the gopis, they said, yes, that's all very well, but, sorry, we are taking you. You are coming. Now. So they put Krishna on his chariot. Somehow Lord Balaram and their sister Subhadra got on also. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they tied ropes on the chariot. Normally it's pulled by horses, of course. And they just pulled Krishna back to Vrindavan. Yes. And Krishna, as he was on the chariot, and they're pulling him and Balaram and Subhadra back to Vrindavan. And Krishna, he knew, and Balaram, they knew, we're going back to Vrindavan, that most wonderful place after so many years. We're going back. They were so excited, so overwhelmed with excitement, completely, that they manifested those forms, the Jagannath deity forms, as you saw probably on the chariot yesterday. In fact, in the next tent, the temple tent, the Jagannath deities are there on the altar. They look a little extraordinary if you're expecting someone to look like, you know, more or less a regular human being. You can see they have sort of human features, basically, but they're certainly not normal looking human features by any means. That is because Krishna and Balaram and Subhadra, they're in that special mood of overwhelming excitement and enthusiasm. Big eyes, big smiles. They're so happy to go back to Vrindavan, to be with their dearest devotees again. So this festival is commemorating that, and more than just commemorating, yesterday when we were pulling the chariot, then we were reenacting. We were reenacting that pastime. Normally we don't reenact the Lord's pastimes. We may talk about them, and remember them. But normally we don't reenact them because it may sort of be something like imitating the Lord. Yeah. So normally we don't really do that, although we may talk about it and discuss about the pastimes. But in this case, we reenact the pastime. Pulling Krishna. So yesterday it was as if the beachfront down by the swimming pools, as if they were Kurukshetra, and the path all the way up and along and so on was the road to Vrindavan. And here, this is Vrindavan for a few days. And you know, when they got back to Vrindavan with Krishna, they had a big festival. So that's what we're doing. Maybe they had questions and answers also, I don't know. Maybe, I think the only question would have been that, Krishna, you're not leaving again, are you? Anyway, that's a little background to this festival. It's very nice. Very beautiful, actually. So that's a little background to the festival. Now we've got a number of questions here, so we will try to answer some of them. And if any of you do have questions, further questions, well, we've got the microphone here, I suppose you could use that, but I think there's a questions sheet, isn't there, out there somewhere? Is it? You got it there? Okay. So if anyone has any questions, you can write them down on the question sheet, and maybe from time to time, if someone has a question they really want to ask from the floor, then we've got an extra microphone, you could stand up and ask your question. First of all, though, I'll answer some of these questions. Oh, we got some high-level questions here. Please explain why Krishna is supreme in relation to Lord Ram, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, and the demigods Indra, Shiva, and Brahma. Okay, that's an important question. How is it that we have come to this conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but even in the sense of being higher than any other of his own forms? Yes, well, that's an interesting question. There are so many forms of the Lord. Here another three are mentioned: Ram, Vishnu, Narayan, and someone's asked a question here about Lord Narasinga. That's another form, and there are many, many forms. In fact, in the Bhagavatam it says, there are so many forms, just as many as there are waves in the ocean. That's a lot, isn't it? I don't know if any of you are from surfing backgrounds. I hope you're not from fishing backgrounds. But if you have some experience with the sea, you'd know there's lots of waves out there. Between here and the west coast of Australia, I think if you tried to count how many waves, I think you'd just get lost and you'd drown in a little while. There are so many forms of the Lord. This is just another way of saying there is an unlimited number of forms of the Lord. Not just 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 or even 1,000,000,000 or, you know, some very large figure like that. It's literally unlimited. Literally unlimited. So there are so many forms of the Supreme Lord, but of those, well, we could say different of those forms possess, or if not possess, at least they display more or less of the qualities and characteristics and features of the Lord's nature. So Krishna, why do we accept Krishna as being the topmost of all forms of the Lord? That is because he manifests all of the qualities of God. Any of the other forms, they manifest, they display less. Even you can come down to some, they only manifest one form, or one characteristic, one quality. And the other, so many qualities, they don't manifest, they don't display at all. But Krishna displays all of the qualities. Therefore he is called Krishna. This word Krishna is not just, you know, a label. It's a name, but it's not just a name in the sense of being a label. Like we all have names given by our parents. And they just decided that here comes this child, let us call him whatever it may be. It's sort of arbitrary. It's basically just as they feel. And there's not necessarily any specific connection between the name and the person who has the name. In other words, the name may not be appropriate even to the person. I'll give you an example that I have met here in South Africa. Well, for that matter, not only met, but we have one of our workers at the temple. He's been working there a few years. He's, you know, steady worker. His name is Conductor. Why? Because his mother somehow just got a fascination with bus conductors. I'm serious. I'm just completely serious. So she thought, you know, when I have a son, I'm just going to call him Conductor. And she did. But he is not a bus conductor. He's working at our temple, which is a lot better than being a bus conductor. But, you know, it's just that the name, it's just a label. It's not that it's really appropriate in terms of sort of embodying what he's about. I met one man, his name was Justice. He was a gangster. And various others. I've met, not here in South Africa, but in Spain, I've met a couple of men. Their names were Jesus. And I mean, let's face it, we may have within this room some Indian man whose parents gave him the name Krishna, isn't it? Or Vishnu, or something like that. So in other words, we get these names from our parents, but, you know, they're just like labels. They don't necessarily have anything to do with what we are. You know, they may call you John, they might just as well have called you Peter, or Fred, or anything. It was just how they felt, that's all. So now, God, he also has names. Krishna. Well, first of all, we mentioned this the other day, that this word God, we don't really use it so much. In fact, Prabhupada, when he was forming on a legal level, registering this movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he was registering it in America. So, you know, he filled out all the forms, and he put the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He went in, and the people said that, you know, why don't you call it the International Society for God Consciousness? People may be able to relate to it better. But Prabhupada was insistent. No, Krishna, Krishna Consciousness. For that matter, when we were registering our society here in South Africa, the devotees went to the man behind the desk, some petty Afrikaans bureaucrat. He looked at this International Society for Krishna Consciousness and he said, no, no, no. You can't be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. You have to be the South African Society for Krishna Consciousness, SASKCON. So there was an argument, a little sort of debate about this. And then the devotees had brought some Simply Wonderfuls. Sweets, in other words. Prasadam, already offered to Krishna. So, one devotee, Gokulendra, he told the man, oh, just a second. My wife made some sweets for you. Here, take one. It's a prasadam sweet. Blessed. So the man took it and looked at it and the devotee said, go on, take it, it's very nice. So he just took the whole thing. And then he said, all right, you can be ISKCON then. So we are registered, actually, as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyway, our point was, though, about the name Krishna and this term God. So we say, Prabhupada said, this term God, it is a term denoting type. Type means, like, some of you are men, some of you are women. So we could call out to any of you, hey, you man, and you might get the message, oh, they're referring to me. Or you woman, and you might see, oh yes, they're calling out to me. So this is a term of type. It is not personal. It is not specific. But all of you have your name. All of you have your name. So we can call out, you know, Namacharya, Swarup, Damada, this one, that one. And then you all know, oh yes, it's me. So that is more personal than if I just call out to you, oh man, you. Isn't it? It's not so nice. Yeah, it's not so nice. So using these terms of type, generic terms, this is not so nice as using a personal name to address a person. So God is the term of type. And there are many names. The first name is Krishna. Now Krishna does not have parents to just give him a name. Oh, we'll call him Krishna, why not? No. So where does he get these names from? Well, these names are not exactly names in that sense of being labels and arbitrary, you know, terms like that. But these names of the Supreme Lord, they are descriptive terms. Krishna means the all-attractive person. So when we refer to him as Krishna, it is completely appropriate. Because he is Krishna. He is all-attractive. He does have all attractive qualities in full. You might be called Krishna. But you are not. You don't have all qualities, do you? A few to a small degree only. That's all. So Krishna, this name Krishna is referring to that form of the Supreme Lord who has all the qualities in full, all of them without exception. Other forms of the Lord, they have less qualities. Some may be 90% or 80 or 70, until you get down to some forms of the Lord, they only manifest one of the qualities of God. Still they're considered a form of God, but they are not manifestations of God on the level as he is as Krishna. He who has all attractive qualities in full. He has all qualities, all the beauty, all the beauty. It's described in Nectar of Devotion. Krishna is so beautiful that Srimati Radharani, the topmost devotee, she got angry one day. She got angry with Lord Brahma, the creator. He has made our bodies, at least in the sense of the prototypes. He is the origin of the species. So she got angry with Lord Brahma. You think you're a big creator. You created the human species. You created the planets and everything. So you think you're a big creator. But as far as I'm concerned, you don't know how to create. Why? Because you have made these bodies with eyes that blink. And when I blink, I can't see Krishna. That means, we know what that means. For a split second, you've been blinking all day. Did any of you really notice that, I lost sight of something for a split second because I blinked? No, we don't even notice it. Well, that's been happening every few seconds for our entire life. You know, it's something we hardly think about. But Srimati Radharani was appreciating, looking at the beauty of Krishna was so amazing that when she couldn't see Krishna for that split second, when she blinked just like that, she thought, this is very bad. Not just bad, but very, very bad. So she chastised Lord Brahma. You think you're a big creator, but as far as I'm concerned, you are a dunce. I don't think they have dunces in school any longer, but in the old days, if there was some child who just did something really stupid, they had this hat with D on it for dunce, and he'd have to go and stand looking into the corner with his hat on. So dunce means like so stupid, just like the village idiot or something like that. So this is how Radharani was thinking. And then she said, she offered a prayer, that I pray that in my next life I can be a fish in the Yamuna. So we might think, what? A fish in the Yamuna? Yes, a fish in the Yamuna, because fish never blink. Did you know that? A little bit of, you know, fish knowledge for you. Fish go through their lives, they never blink. They don't blink. So she said, then I can see Krishna uninterruptedly. That'll be very nice. So Krishna's so beautiful. Sometimes people would see Krishna, they would faint. Bang. Even men, big, strong men, they see Krishna's beauty is so overpowering, they just lose their senses. Did anyone faint when they saw you? Perhaps out of fright or shock. What is this? Anyway, Hare Krishna, excuse me. Shouldn't say that. You're all very nice. Okay. Anyway, Krishna. Krishna has all attractive qualities in full. All beauty, all strength. Even Krishna, like, just as an example, the Muslims, they use the name Allah. I think we're all aware of that. As far as I'm aware, it means something along the lines of the greatest. Something like that. Allah Akbar. Something like that. Means Allah, he is the greatest, biggest, greatest. So, Krishna, God, he's the greatest, of course. So therefore we accept that name, Allah, as being bona fide, acceptable as a name of God. But Krishna, meaning the Lord, with all his qualities, he is not just the greatest. In Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam, that Krishna, not only is he so great, everything's within him, he's the greatest. Not only is he that, but he is so small. He is within the atom. Atom means the smallest particle of reality. If you divide some part, something, divide to the point where you cannot divide any further, it becomes indivisible. That we call the atom. But Krishna is within the atom. He is so small. So, he's Allah, he's the greatest. But Krishna includes that, plus that he's the smallest. So just see how appropriate and broad is the application of this term Krishna. Yeah. He is the most beautiful, but he's also the ugliest. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mrityu sarva haras chaham. I am all devouring death. So, you know, even if you're a sort of person who doesn't like beauty, some people, they like horrible things. Yes. You know, maybe I shouldn't tell this, but I was on an airplane a few days ago, a week or two ago, coming back. And they played one movie of Mr. Bean. Aha. That's revealing. You've heard about him, it seems. Anyway, he's very funny. British humor. Very clever. So, Mr. Bean went to a horror movie. And Mr. Bean, he was just like totally beside himself. He had a huge packet of popcorn. In the end, he put the packet over his head so he couldn't see what was going on the screen. It was too much. But the person sitting next to him was just lapping it up. This is just great. So some people, they like it. They like horror, pain, destruction, devastation. They're attracted to it. Just like one of our devotees, Mother Rati Manjari, a few years ago during the book distribution marathon in Cape Town, she was distributing books in one shopping mall, and she met, some of you I'm sure have heard about this, she met one of these heavy metal boys, you know what I mean? Kind of satanic, all in black and long hair and sort of mean looking, with some like a button with a skull and crossbones, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. So, you know, on that side of life. So she tried to distribute a book to him. And he looked at the book and he said, yeah. He said, haven't you got anything a little heavier? And she thought, you know, what have we got which he might like? Then she remembered she had a book called Dharma. You might be familiar with it. I think we have it in our book tent. Dharma. So in there, in the middle, there's some pictures. And there's a big double page spread of a man dying. And the Yamadutas are there, pulling him out of his body. And it's, you know, it's a bit of a shocker, in other words. And the Yamadutas look like, you know, the worst heavy metal person times 1,000 or something. They look like ghouls, you know, just hobgoblins. Really bizarre. So she opened the book at this picture and showed this young man. He said, "Ah, that looks cool." Serious. And he took the book. He took the book. So just see, Krishna is all attractive. He has all attractive qualities in full. Not just the nice qualities, not just some of the qualities, but all the qualities, and not just partially, but in full. Therefore, he is accepted as the topmost manifestation of the Supreme Lord. He is the original form of God. Here you mention Ram. So Lord Ram is also very nice. We love Lord Ram. He's wonderful. We worship Lord Ram. But he does not manifest some of the qualities that Krishna does. I'll give you one example. I think you'll understand if you're familiar with the two a little. That Lord Ram does not have any mischievous pastimes. He doesn't have any pranks and tricks and, you know, get up to any sort of, so to speak, nonsense. But Krishna does. He is the butter thief. Yes. Anyway, we won't go into all that. It'll take quite some time. But, so, Krishna is displaying certain qualities which Lord Ram is not displaying. That's a fact. That's a fact. So therefore, Krishna is accepted as the topmost feature of God. Now, of course, that's a very big subject, and there are many things we could say about that from many points of view. But that's just giving some idea. Okay, now here's one we can deal with quickly. What is the spiritual significance of the elephant, if any? Well, if any, yes, that's correct. Not so much. Like, intrinsically. On the material platform, elephants are considered auspicious. Just like people would count wealth, not in terms of money, pieces of paper with little pictures on them. Not in terms of money, but in terms of number of cows. In terms of how much grains they had stored. This is actual wealth. And elephants also, kings. If a king had a lot of elephants, he would be called Gajapati or Gajendra, Lord of the Gaja, Master of the Gaja, the elephants. So elephants are considered auspicious materially, but spiritually they don't really have so much significance. Lord Nrisimhadeva is half man and half lion. This is interesting question. What does this form of the Lord eat? Please forgive me for any offense caused by asking this. Okay, fair enough. Well, look, it depends on how he's feeling. You catch him up. When he's in the wrong mood, you better watch out, because he might eat you. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarvaharaschaham, I am all-devouring death. And when Arjuna saw that aspect of Krishna's nature, because Krishna displayed these things, then Arjuna saw some massive form of Krishna, and people were racing into his mouth, and he was just eating them just like that. Yes. So he eats everything. When the creation is dissolved, everything goes back into him. What to speak of all of us, but the planets, everything goes into him. Otherwise, like on Lord Nrsingadev's appearance day, we offer him nice vegetarian food. And we suggest you do. And don't get on the other side of him, okay? You could end up in trouble. Well, here's a question I can also answer briefly. Please explain the birth or appearance of Tulsi Devi. Tulsi is a devotee in the form of a plant. She's a plant, but she's a great lover of God. Of course, now when we think about a plant, then we think of something which is nowhere near a human being, of course. But now in the kingdom of God, all the living entities there, everything there is fully conscious, fully developed. Not to speak of the plants just being, you know, dull, unable to express themselves, unable to speak or act. Not to speak of the plants in the kingdom of God being able to do whatever they like. Even the earth, even the rocks are all conscious. There's no dead matter. Everything is alive in the kingdom of God, living and conscious. So, there are descriptions how in the spiritual world, in the kingdom of God, when Krishna comes walking through the forest, and all the flowering plants, they see, oh, here comes Krishna. All the flowering plants, they all get up. They come running over. And the flowers throw themselves under Krishna's feet to provide a nice soft carpet for him to walk on. And after he's walked on them and has walked on, then they get up. They come running around and they throw themselves under his feet again. Just see. And there are descriptions that the rice, there is rice in the spiritual world, and Krishna eats the rice. The grains of rice are fighting with each other to see who can be first into the pot to be cooked for Krishna. And when Krishna eats the rice, then mystically the rice manifests again, and then again they're fighting to get into the pot. It goes on like that. Anyway, Tulsi, we were talking about Tulsi. So she is a great devotee in the form of a plant. But we should not think that she's just some insignificant plant, like any other plant practically. No. She's a great devotee, and Krishna is very fond of her and her leaves and her flowers. So she's eternally in that form. The question is, explain about her birth. Well, the fact is that ultimately there is no birth. There was no birth. Just like when Krishna appeared here 5,000 years ago, there was no birth. Really? Not as we were born. Not at all. So, but of course there was some pastime which in certain respects resembled birth, but it was not actually that. So Srimati Tulsi Devi, she appeared, and there was a certain sort of mechanism behind it. But that's just a pastime. We don't really worry about it. It's not really significant. She's eternally a plant. And Krishna is eternally very fond of her. And she enjoys offering her leaves and flowers for Krishna's use. Okay, let's see here. Okay. I don't know if I understand this. What are the two kinds of householders, and what is the objective of each? Well, I can just sort of interpret that question and say there are two types of householders. One is a devotee householder, another is a non-devotee householder, materialistic family person. So these are two types of householders. Now, on the surface, many of their activities may be the same. If not very similar, they may actually be the same. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's speaking to Arjuna. Arjuna is a householder, so he works. Generally, if people are married, they have a family, they have to work to get some money to maintain the family. So Arjuna, he was a married man, he had a family, he had to do that. So as it happened, his work was, he was a soldier. He was a soldier. So it's sort of irrelevant whether he was a soldier, a businessman, a laborer, a teacher, a lawyer. It doesn't really matter. The point is he was a working man and he was earning to maintain his family. So the material, but he's a devotee. So the materialistic householder, non-devotee, family man, may also be a soldier or whatever, something, working to get some money. But now we say that one, Arjuna, is a devotee, he's different. And the other, the non-devotee, is different. But they're both soldiers. They may be both soldiers. But what's the difference then? The difference is that the devotee householder is dedicating everything in his household life to the pleasure of Krishna, using the income to provide Krishna conscious facilities for the family, to provide food. The food is offered to Krishna, the family members eat that prasadam, so the money is being used to provide prasadam and to get books and so on, different types of things for the development of the family's Krishna consciousness. The house, instead of having pictures of, you know, whatever, bowls of flowers or landscapes and so on around the walls, have pictures of Krishna. And instead of sitting home at night watching TV, then have a Krishna conscious evening program. Instead of having a TV, have a Krishna conscious altar. So like this. On the surface, at least in certain respects, it seems they're the same. Like we said with Arjuna and this other materialistic soldier. They're both soldiers. But one is a devotee, one is not a devotee. So the devotee, his life is geared in all respects. His whole family is geared for Krishna consciousness. The non-devotee, the materialistic person, their family is just geared to materialistic life. At night, they sit home and watch a Hindi movie video like... What? Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. I don't know what the latest is. What's the latest? Speak up. I can't hear you. We have a Hindi movie expert here. Anyway, there's some latest Hindi movie. It's either boy meets girl, girl meets boy. We don't know if they've sort of graduated or degraded to girl meets girl yet, but we're sure they'll get there sooner or later. Boy meets boy. Yes. Anyway. So instead of sitting at home watching these silly things, have a Krishna conscious evening program. This way the whole family becomes Krishna conscious. Here's a good question. What is the cause of anxiety?